You're listening to Architecture Masters at Home, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture.
We have this principle, like, we never publish freestanding house anymore, because if you publish this in Flanders with the land occupation we have here, it's actually immoral. Although it might be very good architecture, but what we want to, the message we want to give is have the same quality of architecture, but in a place and in a context.
Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters at Home. I'm Owen Wainhouse.
I'm Sophie de Cagny. I'm the director of the Flanders Architecture Institute.
On the programme this week, we're joined by Sophie de Cagny, director of VAI, the Flanders Architecture Institute. The VAI is based in Antwerp, across two buildings, with gallery space and public programmes taking place in the international arts campus De Singel. As well as their extensive public programme, every 2 years the Institute produces the Flanders Architecture Review, a major publication presenting a generous selection of recently completed projects across Flanders and Brussels. Now in its 14th edition, the review presents a snapshot of the architecture of a certain place and time, with an analysis of trends and successes. I spoke to Sophie last week, down the line from Antwerp, where the VAI's offices are slowly starting to reopen.
I guess I've been interested recently, we're seeing in the UK a little bit of perhaps the beginning of, I guess, devolution and a slightly more kind of federal system in the UK, actually with COVID, where national governments in the UK are starting to have different rules on lockdown and the restrictions kind of in place. So we're starting to see England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland having their own rules. And that's quite new for us, I guess, as a country. But Belgium obviously has had for a long time a very strong federal system. I guess just be interested for you to tell us a little bit about your work in Flanders. Mm-hmm. You work a little bit in Brussels as well. How that,
just a bit of... Well, just to give an introduction, it's true that Belgium, there was one state, of course, and then the cultural and the linguistic regions started to ask for more independency, and especially in culture and in education. And then this started in the 1980s. And especially in the 1990s, the cultural policies were really divided amongst the different regions. And what's very surprising is that now with COVID, actually the Belgian government was in charge. I think some months before the crisis started, we had a new premier, our first female premier, Sophie Wilmès. And she was really the face of this crisis, and she tried to lead the country through the crisis. So it's maybe a little bit the opposite movement from what you are describing in the UK. So this was for us quite surprising. And maybe it's because it's a very small country. So we're about 11 million people, and we are, I think, the highest density together with the Netherlands of population in Europe. So yeah, maybe it's impossible for this kind of crises to divide the country and to have separate rules and restrictions and a separate regime, let's say, for these different regions. But we are working in architecture, and it's true that the architecture policies are different in different parts in Belgium. So we have, for the region of Flanders, there is the Flanders Architecture Institute as the cultural institution, and we have a government architect. We call him the Vlaams Bouwmeester. So, and he assists public commissioners in choosing an interesting design and in choosing quality and in choosing an architect. And this, it's interesting to see that in 2000, the government architect was founded, and 2001, the Flanders Architecture Institute was founded. And these two institutions, well, they, I don't know if it's an expression in English, but they work a bit as brothers and sisters, you know, like, so the, our mission is very different, but of course, what we want to aim for, what we work for, what's our passion is to improve the quality of the built environment. environment for all, for everybody who is living here. So it's very complementary what we do. Then you have in Wallonia, there is no government architect, but in the city of Charleroi, there is a city architect. But you do have this cultural institution in the French part of Belgium. And in Brussels is, of course, well, the most maybe cosmopolitan, most international place in Belgium. And there you have the influence both of Flanders, French-speaking part, but it's so international. I think the city has like 190 different languages among its inhabitants. And there you have a Baumeister, so also a government architect for the region of Brussels. And you also have SIVA, and that's very interesting. SIVA is actually our counterpart, an institution in Brussels that's also programming architectural exhibitions, organizing tours. They also have a collection of architectural archives, and they are merging with Centre Pompidou, who will have a place, well, at a big art institute in Paris, and they will open up Canal in Brussels, like a dépendance.
This is the old Citroën factory.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. It's a garage, literally. Yeah. It's a beautiful 1930s building, and it will be a very big art space with an architectural institute inside. It's inside the building, and also very integrated with the program on art. Okay. So this is a little bit the landscape of architectural policy in Belgium. So you see that there are many voices, and the interesting thing, of course, is that we all working in this. So we work in this political frame where we are, most of us are funded by the government. So yeah, this is the way the institutions merged and how we work on an institutional level. But then if you look at the programs, we work together. So for example, we have this program that's called Across, and we invite here in Antwerp French-speaking young architects. For most of them, it's the first time they get the opportunity to present their work and their way of working to an audience. And since it's another audience, because it's, of course, here people speak Dutch, most of it is in English. It's very interesting to see from a distance, like, okay, this is Belgium. But then we try to, you know, cross the bridge and make connections, because in the end, it's a very small country. And some of the challenges we are facing, like the ecological transition, and it's you need to look broader than just the small region we're working in.
That's interesting. So interested then, I guess, to tell us a little bit more about the VAI. It's the Vlaamse Architecture Institute.
Yeah, very
I don't
well.
Get my so Flanders Institute of Architecture. You
yes.
said founded in 2001, mm-hmm. and you've got a dual remit then in terms of public. It's interesting, we've spoken recently, I think we're speaking to the Canadian Centre for Architecture recently, and we might come on to that mm-hmm. a little bit later mm-hmm. with the association. But just interested in your public, you'd say public engagement, as mm-hmm. well as is there a research component? Just be kind of interested in more about the institution, the work that you, that
yes.
you do.
So indeed, the Flanders Architecture Institute is founded in 2001, and we are based in Antwerp. We are our home is actually an international art center. It's called The Single, and The Single programs on theater, contemporary dance, music, and there is also a big art school in this building. So we talk about the arts campus, in which the Flanders Architecture Institute provides everything regarding the programming, debates, lectures, films, exhibitions on architecture. And the reason we are in this home is because when this art center was founded in the 1980s, the artistic director thought it was very important to use actually the corridors and the spaces people used to go to the theaters and the halls. She wanted to have also cultural programming in those circulation spaces. And this is actually how the architecture program was found. So it's very interesting that there is a longer history that goes long before 2000, that we are very closely related with other art disciplines. And then, so we have an exhibition space here with a gallery, and we program monographic shows on architects that are working in Flanders and Brussels, like, for example, Noah Architecte, Cousin-Gour, his De Velde Vink Tailleux, Bovenbouw, these kind of offices. And we try to program them just before they have an international public that recognizes them. So we call this breakthrough exhibitions, because actually we try to find offices that are just in this phase where they are not yet internationally recognized. And it's an invitation to especially reflect on their methodology, their way of representation. And they're always invited to show their work, but also to take care of the scenography themselves. So the exhibition space is really a white cube. It's not a very interesting space, but it forces the architects to actually every time come up with a lot of scenography. And well, it's part of almost the DNA of the way we work with architects. And then we also have a series of smaller exhibitions, and there we focus on young offices. Okay. So we had Eagles of Architecture, Slinkatoi, so names that are not yet published internationally, but
will be shortly.
Yes, we are convinced that the selection is very promising.
You heard it here first. Yeah, remember those names. That's, so I'm interested then, I guess, to come on a little bit. Obviously, the institute reflects the architects working in the in the area. Just, I should perhaps declare an interest of having lived in Brussels for a while and toyed with the idea of moving to Antwerp. We spoke to Ellie Stathaki a couple of month or so ago, who talked about writing the architecture or the wallpaper guide to Antwerp. And it's a very, certainly to a Brit, it's a very trendy feeling city. You know, it's got a real kind of edge and a interesting vibe, architecturally as much as anything else, to the city. But just be interested to talk a little bit about what Flemish architecture is. I mean, for me anyway, the contrast between places like Bruges and Ghent, maybe in terms of the parts of Antwerp, but historical legacy and a Flemish style there, but also what is modern Flemish architecture? What's the
That's a very interesting question, actually, because if we try to define, especially for people that they're not very familiar with the architecture here, we always focus on several things, and one of them is that actually we have a lack of good urban legislation. And this forces architects that for every commission they get, it's every building they build is not only about architecture, but also needs to have an urban gesture almost. So many architects profoundly study the context, the spatial context, and well, they are very interested in trying through architecture, in a sense, repair or add something to what is lacking on an urbanistic level. So this is something, and this brings them very close to the context, and some of the architecture is really, almost just adding another layer, but not very loud, not very look at me, but more, well, in a very refined and almost silent way. So this is one of the characteristics. Another is that this idea of studying the context, and then comes to your question about Bruges and Ghent. Many architects have a deep interest in the historical city, and not only in the typologies of the buildings, and also, the views and the picturesque, but also in the way the crafts of making well, is part of our culture. And so, well, I also teach in the University of Antwerp. And when I look at the studios, many architects, when they are teaching, they come up with references, some very old references, some contemporary references. But I mean, they feed their students with so many possible knowledge and possible examples, and you see it in the built environment that it's really loaded with references to the historical city, to how you make things and the materiality that comes with it. And this materiality is something that fascinates me, because we are very close to the Dutch border, and the scale of Dutch architecture is completely different. So you have much more bigger projects. The entire legislation about it is so much stricter, and while here the architect is really in charge, not only of the design but also of the way the building is made. And this makes that most of the architects we are working with, they love to go to the building site, they love to talk to the people who are really making the building, and they're very interested in some details, in a special preference for certain materials and the materiality of building. And I often wonder if this would also be possible if we had more projects on bigger scales, because then of course you're in a completely different situation. Mm. Yeah, and I think this is also one of the challenges we're facing, that this smaller scale architecture, I don't know if it's the future. So we will, I guess, go towards bigger city developments where you have another relation with your commissioner. And I wonder how architecture in Flanders will cope with it and how it will evolve. Yes.
I was really... this is 10 years ago, I guess, 10, 15 years ago in Brussels, but what struck me initially moving there was this, and I guess the same in Antwerp, that projects may be worse, it seemed to me to be slower. And in terms of the development, when I was there, the development around Flagey and this big urban new public square, and mm-hmm. even the European Commission building, which took years to finish. But mm-hmm. when they were finished, the kind of attention to detail and the quality, the materials was... struck me unlike anything I'd seen in London. So I became interested in that balance between quality and speed and the balance there. I don't know whether that's something that's changed in the intervening time, or whether that's a noticeable difference, but it struck me, you know, once something's built, it's done properly. And I really, really admired that.
Yeah, I think maybe London, the economic... pressure behind the development of London is you cannot compare to what's happening here. So maybe that forces building companies to go fast. Yeah. I don't know. But on the other hand, yes, because for example, in 1991, so long time ago, there was an international competition for the older harbor parts of Antwerp that are very close to the city center. And it took two decades to actually put, for example, the first stone of the new bigger buildings that are there. But this is very interesting, because then there is a new Old Harbour district that is now a very nice place to live, with museums and bars, and it's very lively already. But it is because it took so long to get there. So there is this. Even in new developments, often because of the slowness, let's say, there is often also
to kind of a means. Meanwhile,
to have a meanwhile use that. And this is of course very attractive to people because if people come there, there is already some life there, and in the texture of the streets and of the public space, you feel that there is this kind of layer. Not everything is built at once in a very rapid rhythm, but there is indeed some slowness. But of course, it also frustrates people here, that why it takes so long, and this is also part of public discussions.
But the flip side, I guess, of that is maybe what you used to see in China 20 years ago is things being very rapidly built and often built at lower quality and torn down kind of 20 years ago. So, well, I could reminisce for ages about Antwerp and Brussels. I suppose for the sake of time, we should move on to one of the Institute's main or larger projects, which is the Flanders Architectural Review. I guess, interesting for us, you know, that's... Am I right in describing it as a kind of a survey? It's a sort of awards. It's a sort of, there's an editorial process. Certainly in the UK, we have a big awards program as a way of recognising the talent. But this is slightly different. Just tell us about 14th edition just coming out. Just tell us about the history and the architectural review.
Okay, yes, well, one of my, I think it's one of the key projects of our institution, and for many reasons. So we start every 2 years, so it's a biennial edition, and it starts with an open call for projects, and commissioners, architects, users send in projects, and we received for this edition around 450 projects, and then well, I invite people for an editorial board, and it's very important for me that there's always a building architect, there's always an academic, there is a photographer, there is something from the somebody who comes from abroad. So now we had a Dutch architect. So it's they work as a commission, but it's an editorial board, and this is something that's it's a very important difference because a commission just chooses, while an editorial board always has in mind, okay, what are we seeing and what are the evolutions we are looking at, and what are the bigger lines we can take out, and what is
the trends
exactly. And then we study pictures, plans, we go on field trips, we visit around 150 buildings, we have interviews with architects, with inhabitants, with commissioners, and then we make a selection, and we publish around this edition has around 50 projects, and every project is documented with plans, with photography, with texts. But this is very important, but then what's for me the most challenging part is actually the essays we are publishing, because in these essays we try to, well, identify trends, and it's not always the good news show. So in the essays we also see, we identify challenges, risks that we see, like, but also very interesting developments, like we saw many projects where you have a completely different balance or collaborative work between artists and architects, or between users and architects, and you have a very participatory project towards a building. So this kind of things are identified, and when we publish it, it's a bilingual publication, so we have a Dutch edition and an English edition. We try to send it around the world literally, but we also make a program out of it, so we travel also in Flanders, present it at several occasions, and have discussions with people who are disappointed that they're not in the book, with students who want to. Yeah, so we have many people are always with big expectations when the book is coming out.
That's interesting. I mean, and that's similar to the awards program, I guess, in other countries, but it's a really interesting difference between a program which is, and so the kind of editorial approach to identifying trends at the time, which certainly I don't think maybe some work the Architecture Foundation's done in London, but certainly the kind of standard awards process by our membership body here is not quite so editorially focused. And then just be interesting, people can get their hands on the review, but in terms of trends, are there emerging things that you're seeing? What are there any kind of headline?
Well, yes, actually we have overarching topic, and we really wanted to address in this edition the fact that a good building is not just the work of a very talented designer. So we really wanted to address the importance of the civic society, where you have quality chambers, where you have a network of cultural institutions that program on, for example, ecology, density in cities, where you actually prepare the public opinion, but also the commissioner for innovation in architecture. And it's not just the genius of the designer, but it's actually many organizations, also civil servants that are in administrations that try to break through some of the legislation and are really needed. And well, the editorial I wrote is really a plea, or I try to address there the politicians, that in our neoliberal society where we are in, that cutting there and cutting in this civic society might also have an impact on the quality of our built environment, and thus also on the quality of the lives of people. And so, and I had already written this editorial text before the COVID, and then the COVID came, and then you saw that the nurses, the public broadcasting company. So actually, this kind of civic society kept the nation alive, literally. So it just came, and then I had a little extra some sentences saying that well, we hope this is a chance for not only focus on the profit, because of course architecture is an arts discipline, but it's also a building industry, a part of the building industry and the creative industry. So it was really a plea for to re-evaluate the values that go with it.
So fortuitous timing in that sense, I guess. Certainly in this country, the Prime Minister today is talking about, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but talking about renewed government investment in building and, you know, investing, and maybe that will be, you know, I guess
Yes, because especially if the country is in lockdown, I mean, it's a huge difference where you're living, and there are very, very, very crowded places in Brussels and in Antwerp and in Ghent, where many young people live, parents that are for generations without a job, and it's, you cannot compare the way that part of society had to go through these months, and also the chances for those children. I mean, if you have four brothers and sisters and just one iPhone where you have to do your homework with, and it also has to do with the public space and the possibilities that are in this neighborhood. So I mean, it is also a spatial question, this entire lockdown.
And then we're interested, I guess, as a podcast, we're interested in people, really, and people driving the kind of professions. How long have you been director of the institute? I mean, you've been at the institute for longer, but just talk us through your
I'm trained as an historian, and that did since I was a teenager, I was always very interested in architecture, but especially in city development. And I really did not know what to choose, whether choosing to go to college. And then I chose history, but more geographically oriented history. And then I did a PhD at the University of Leuven at the architectural department. So I
shifted
more. yes. And the PhD was on dwelling culture and modernism in Flanders. Okay. And after that, I also did a master's in cultural management. And then there was a position that was like head of architectural archives at the Flanders Architecture Institute. And this was for me something that combined those two. Yeah. And well, I was head of this small department.
This was sort of 2005?
Yes, 2006, end of 2006, yes. Okay. And
So the Institute and was quite young at that time. Yeah,
for the Institute, yeah, was only starting. Okay. Exactly. Yes, yes. And in 2016 and 17, there was this very interesting opportunity where the province of Antwerp, who collected architectural archives since the 1980s, and it's a very interesting collection where you have not only beautiful drawings and models, but also an impressive library. And, well, they wanted to let go, let's say, this part of their, because they said it's not... The responsibility of a province, of a provincial yes, exactly. And then I thought, okay, this is a chance to merge, and this is what happened. So our board, but also the province, was very enthusiastic of the idea that the architectural archive would come to the Flanders Architecture Institute, and we would become an architecture institute like the Dutch Architecture Institute, the NIA, used to be, like the CCA is, where you have a very active programming on contemporary issues and contemporary architecture, but it is rooted in a collection. And it also gives the opportunity, because we have very close relationships, of course, with many architects. And well, now we are taking in especially digital archives of architects that are not yet at the end of their career, but they're just in the middle of it. But you cannot wait with the digital for 20 years because you cannot read it anymore. So this is a very interesting position where we combine our network of contemporary architects with the responsibility for the memory of the discipline. And yes, so...
And that international collaboration, but also discussion about how different institutes work, some of that, I guess, comes into your role through ICAM. Just tell us a little bit about ICAM.
Okay, yes, I mean, yes,
and the connection there for us with the CCA was interesting.
Okay, so ICAM, the International Confederation of Architectural Museums, is an international organization. We have about 120 members worldwide, where architectural museums, architectural archives, but also libraries of architectural departments of universities, they are members. And every 2 years, we come together with many professionals in our field worldwide, and then we discuss, for example, this question I was, or this this very interesting challenge we are all facing the same, is the digital. And there we collaborate, we try to put our ideas and our procedures and, well, just our knowledge, we put it together, and we exchange professional experience. And it's also a very nice group of people, because you can, during those days, many collaborations are in terms of books and exhibitions are made, but also you just talk about your field, and you can learn so much from what the others are facing and how they try to, for example, broaden their audiences, how they try to work with with youngsters, because this is very important. If we lose the youngsters, I mean, why would you? This is just the future. So and in this network, I also got to know Mirko Zardini, who used to be the director of CCA for a long time, and also Giovanna Borazzi, who is the current director. And it's interesting to see, because CCA is in this network a very important player, and they have a fabulous collection. They have a very interesting program that is very at stake of what is going on in our field. But on the other hand, they are funded in a different way than most of the European organizations. And if you look at where they are situated in Montreal, they're situated a bit outside the city. And they are so, their work and their network is so much international that they are a bit outside the city. I mean, for us, that would never ever work, because we would not get funding if we would not do give something back to society. So this is a completely different way of working and thinking, and that's actually very interesting to talk about if we meet in this biannual conferences of ICAM.
So I guess, again, we're sort of slightly tight on time. There were just a couple of things earlier on I was kind of interested to, which I'll probably jump back to. I was sort of interested in this idea of housing a little bit, and sort of obviously we've talked a little bit about urban centres in Flanders, but the idea of whether the Flemish are more open to new ideas in housing in certainly in suburbia. There's a very, I was always fascinated by people's openness to new ideas in housing outside the city centres, where maybe apartments are the that, you know, we're perhaps maybe in the UK trapped by this idea of Tudor, mock Tudor or mock Victorian kind of houses, and how tradition maybe kind of dictates how we should live, and that in this country has ended up with people living in tiny rooms that we're, I mean, I guess the big difference is buildings are sold by, if you rent a, I mean, the big difference for Brits is if you rent an apartment in Brussels, in Flanders, it's sold by the square metres rather than the number of bedrooms as much as anything else. Just kind of interested in your thoughts on whether people in Flanders are, you know, more open to different ways of, they don't seem stuck by this kind of Victorian or mock Tudor kind of pastiche architecture, which always struck me as being really progressive. Is that something you...
That's very interesting, this question. I think there are many things. So first of all, after the Second World War, there was the idea here was that private initiative should solve the demand for housing. And so the government started to give to families possibilities, literally money, to build their own house. And together with this financial program, there was also a program of education where you had many, many social organizations. And I mean, I'm talking about the Female Farmers League and like this is really, and they all had a program on dwelling culture and on housing. And they started to, in a way, educate the people that were, of course, giving the possibility to build their own house by the government. And they instructed them with new plans. And they often worked together with really highbrow modernist architects that were experimenting with new ideas, with new materials, with new colors as well. So you have these two things coming together. And this brought, as you described, this brought a very vivid and interesting landscape if you look at the architecture. But if you look at on an urbanistic scale, it's a drama, because the entire countryside was actually split up in small building plots. And everybody who lives there needs not one car, but two, or if your children grow older, three cars. And so in terms of mobility, air pollution of air, in terms of our water system, because, of course, there is too much land that is built, it's a drama. And so it's true that we had this kind of progressive middle class housing policy in the 1950s, 60s, 70s. But now what we inherited now is a complete disaster in terms of ecology. And to have this mindset, I mean, in Flanders, most people dream of a family house that is freestanding with a private garden, and this is actually, and it's also possible for a lot of people to have this, and it's more, in most European cities it's more expensive to live in the city center and to also have some space. But there is this entire problematic, how can we make people enthusiastic to live together to have this idea of co-housing, where you share a garden, where and so the impact on the landscape and on the ecology is lowers. So yeah, it's an interesting question. And to bring it back to the architectural review, we have this principle like, we never publish freestanding house anymore. Because if you publish this in Flanders with the land occupation we have here, it's actually immoral. Okay. Although it might be very good architecture, but what we want to, the message we want to give is have the same quality of architecture, but in a place and in a context where you
it's
can actually
and,
exactly
yeah.
yes
and that's beginning I guess that same approach is beginning to come through in different architectural movements. We've got the Architects Declare movement in the mm-hmm. UK, and
exactly.
people thinking of those
exactly.
That's fascinating.
Yes,
and
yes,
so
yes.
coming back to the review then, how mm-hmm. can people listening, how can they get hold of a review?
Through our website,
okay.
And especially the English version is available there. And then in Flanders, most bookshops have it. And through our international distributor, it is sent also to bookshops in the UK.
Okay. So available at any good bookshop in the UK.
Yes.
And what's the website where people can
vai.be.
Fantastic. That's great.
You've been listening to Architecture Masters at Home. On the programme this week was Sophie Dekenier. You can find out more about Sophie and her work at architecturemasters.org. where you can also subscribe to the programme and follow us on Twitter. If you've enjoyed the programme, why not leave us a review or a rating with your podcast provider, as this really helps others to discover the programme. You've been listening to Architecture Masters at Home. I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.